revolution.
Uhuru, you're listening to Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. Reparations in Action is the weekly program of the African People's Solidarity Committee, the organization of white people working under the leadership of the African People's Socialist Party, organizing in solidarity with the struggle of African people for self-determination, national liberation, and reparations. On today's program, we're going to be discussing the U.S.-wide shift towards marijuana legalization and how this phenomenon impacts upon the millions of African people who are locked down in prison or on parole and probation for drug charges. We will also discuss the U.S. government's role in controlling the illegal drug trade, and we'll be interviewing the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, Walia Brooks. President Walia will explain why Impeedom represents a real solution to the problems faced by African people, including the war on drugs. My name is Jesse. I'm a member of the African People's Solidarity Committee, and I'm joined today by the chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee, Penny Hess. Uhuru, Penny.
Uhuru, Jesse. I think it's going to be a great show today.
Yes, Uhuru. And let's start off by providing some background on the current state of the legalization of marijuana in the U.S. Marijuana is now legal in Colorado and Washington states, where the law now states that adults over the age of 21 are permitted to possess limited amounts of marijuana for personal use. Florida Supreme Court on Monday approved a medical marijuana ballot initiative for this November, and petitioners in Washington, D.C. are hoping to add a legalization measure to the federal city's ballot this fall as well. At the same time, states that are legalizing are doing nothing to release prisoners who are incarcerated for so-called crimes related to marijuana use, a huge percentage of whom are African people. One reason for the legalization is the economic crisis that most states are facing, and the fact that legalized pot creates billions of dollars in taxes and tourism and tourist-related businesses, such as in Colorado. Because of the war on drugs, which is a counterinsurgency against African people, there is no talk of releasing Africans and other people from prison on drug charges.
Uhuru, I think this is an interesting turn of events inside the United States that has spent an incredible amount of militarization and counterinsurgent military forces inside the U.S. and around the world around this question of marijuana. Mm-hmm. And in particularly targeting the African community inside the U.S., while the white community has always had a different relationship to it. But I think that that we're seeing a situation where the U.S. economy is in a severe crisis because, as the chairman says, the resistance of peoples around the world against U.S. domination, colonialism, and wars of occupation is weakening the U.S.'s ability to control the world economy and benefit from the world economy in the way that it has taken for granted in the past. But the fact is that the U.S. is in a serious situation, even mm-hmm. though Obama and the administration is touting this recovery that we're in. The fact is that the economy is crumbling. And when you see a situation like the conditions in Detroit today, where half the city's been closed down or houses can't even afford to tear them down, where it's been abandoned, you know that it's not, the genie's not going back in the bottle. It's never going to be the same again. And the reality is that the U.S. needs this marijuana to be a legal commodity. Certainly the U.S. has controlled the drug trade mm-hmm. since the very beginning. In fact, imperialism and capitalism itself was born on control of the drug trade, which we will talk about in just a minute. But it's, when you look at the state of Colorado now, they're building resorts, they're building hotels, a huge tourist industry, not to mention the cost of the marijuana itself, which is very, very pricey, and the revenues that are going into the state for that. So that is their colonial you know, answer, just like the gold rush and stealing the land of the indigenous people was 150 years ago. This is what this and other states are doing to bring in revenue that they need to keep capitalism afloat.
Right.
But this question for the legalization of drugs is a white issue, because it's always about white people working to legalize marijuana and in some cases other drugs for recreational use. And it is not one that deals with or addresses the fact that drugs have been used as a colonial tool of attacking the African community and maintaining the oppression of African people, especially in the last 40 years since the defeat of the African Revolution of the 1960s, when we began to see this huge influx of heroin and later cocaine into the African community for the benefit, you know, proven that was put there by the CIA and sectors of the U.S. government. But the reality is, Jesse, that as we know, drugs were part of what Karl Marx called the primitive accumulation of capital. In fact, as the chairman quotes many, many times in just about everything he writes, mm-hmm. he quotes this piece by Marx that was in part 8 of the work Capital that says, "The discovery of gold and silver in America, the extirpation, enslavement, and entombment in mines of the Aboriginal population, the beginning of the conquest and looting of the East Indies, the turning of Africa into a warren for the commercial hunting of black skins, signalized the rosy dawn of the era of capitalist production. These idyllic proceedings are the chief momentum of the primitive accumulation." And in it, actually, it's not in exactly this one, but he goes on to say, the opium wars mm-hmm. against China that Britain in the 1840s was waging against China as a colonial war to control the economy of China was part of this primitive accumulation. And what that means is, what did it take for capitalism to get the startup money that it needed to begin to become the world power, the social system that dominates the world based on, as the reality is today, 85 people in the entire world that control half the wealth of the world, $110 trillion. So we see that it was slavery, it was genocide, it was the colonial terror, it was death and destruction of whole civilizations, it was the slaughter and cutting off of hands and arms in Congo to steal the rubber, to force the people to harvest the rubber crops there under the most hideous kind of terror. And it still goes on today. So drugs are not a sideline issue. They're inherent. They're part and parcel. They're integral to what capitalism is. They're slavery, genocide, and drugs.
Yeah.
So it's really important to realize that this is nothing new. And we see this fact that, you know, they're playing up in the media that the banks are not taking anything but cash from the legal marijuana dealers now, because they, whatever, for whatever reason, they want to remain pure, etc. But yet, every bank, from Bank of America to Wells Fargo to HSBC, the Hong Kong Shanghai Banking Corporation, that was actually formed to deposit Britain's opium trade money in the 19th century, have all been exposed to enormous drug laundering money within their, you know, transactions within their banks, and have just had a slap on the hand from the U.S. government, have only had to pay a little bit of a fine that makes it far more lucrative for them to continue to do this. So, you know, we see that this goes on, and this is the reality. But the fact is that banks are the drug dealers. The U.S. government is the drug dealer.
Yeah.
And it's to their benefit now to make it legal, at least part of the drug trade legal. We see that Afghanistan now has the highest opium production ever after 12 years of U.S. occupation and war there. We see Colombia and Mexico and just the tremendous terror that the U.S. has waged in this so-called drug war in Mexico over the last 5 or 6 years, which has really been about the U.S. government controlling the drugs against, you know, as opposed to cartels, which are independent businessmen, mm-hmm. in the state of Mexico, and waged a bloody, bloody counterinsurgency there that killed close to 100,000 people. And, you know, I just think that this whole question of drugs is really deep. And it's not that, oh, the government is becoming more liberal. It's simply because the U.S. government is finding an easier and better way to make money from the drugs, which it has done ever since, you know, the British Empire began imposing drugs, and France did the same to Vietnam in making Vietnam a drug colony, and that's what really paved the streets of Paris and built right. all of the beautiful buildings, quote-unquote, that are there today.
That was referred to as the Golden Triangle, correct?
Yes, the Golden Triangle in Southeast Asia. And I just think that as North Americans, we have to understand that this drug question is not about, oh, legalization, we can enjoy it.
Right.
It is a tool that has been used for the building and maintaining of capitalism at the expense of literally millions and millions and millions of people, Africans inside this country, Asians, Latin Americans, and many others, so that it is a commodity that the U.S. controls for the benefit of the U.S. and U.S. imperialism.
Thank you, Chairwoman Penny. I think that's really helpful to hear you put it out like that, and it just shows that the problem with the way a lot of the pro-legalization, marijuana legalization activist movement talks about this question as if it's some kind of like ambiguous question that has no relationship to the colonization of African people, the imprisonment of African people, and all these different, and counterinsurgency. You know, sometimes the marijuana question will be talked about like its health benefits will be the primary aspect of the discussion. And I've even heard people in from organizations like Normal uphold the fact that, I think it was like the Declaration of Independence was written on hemp paper or something like that, as if that's something to celebrate, you know. And, you know, as you're showing, the whole question of drugs and even marijuana has always been used as a tool for attacking and criminalizing and exploiting colonized people. And in the case of marijuana, there's some brief history, the background of the origins of the marijuana prohibition laws that were initiated as a cover for the criminalization of Mexican people and the ongoing genocide against the indigenous people of Mexico after the theft of half of Mexico by U.S. invaders. Right. The first three states that passed laws prohibiting the use of marijuana were Utah, California, and Texas, which all of which comprise part of that half of Mexico that was stolen just a couple of decades before these laws were written onto the books. In 1915, a El Paso, Texas Sheriff's Department Chief Deputy Stanley Good talked about how, you know, wrote about saying that the crimes committed in that area were committed by, quote, men saturated with the drug, and then clarified, quote, most Mexicans in this section are addicted to the habit. And he referred to marijuana as Indian hemp, and he was one of the first that launched the legislative crusade to criminalize marijuana as a cover for the colonial genocide and criminalization of the indigenous people of occupied Mexico. So even going back 100 years, it's never been a simple, clear-cut issue of you know, marijuana legalization. It's always been about colonialism and criminalization of colonized people. And as you mentioned, Chairwoman Penny, the real problem is parasitic capitalism that was built on this kind of violence and brutality and genocide, built on the enslavement of Africans and the colonial genocide of the indigenous people and the theft of their land. So we have to look at the question of marijuana legalization in that context.
So true. And we have to look at everything in that context. Right. And I just think that, you know, as white people, for all of us that consider ourselves progressive, mm-hmm. that consider ourselves wanting to change the world, that we have to begin by looking at anything that the U.S. government says is a lie.
Exactly.
Everything that it's putting out is for the benefit of maintaining a system built on this blood-sucking mm-hmm. of African indigenous oppressed people around the world who are suffering. Look what the U.S. is doing in Syria right now. Look what it has done to Iraq mm-hmm. and still doing it. Look what it's doing in Afghanistan and to the Palestinian people. There's no place around the world that the U.S. hand is not a bloody hand of death, mm-hmm. bringing about destruction of people's culture, of their lives, everything. And the use of drugs has been part and parcel of that. We know about the Iran-Contra, in which the U.S. was dealing, using drug dealers to invade the heroic and courageous government of the Sandinistas that won a victory mm-hmm. in 1979 in Nicaragua. The U.S. was trying to overturn that, and also using the drugs from that trash of people that they were employing to invade Nicaragua and force the Nicaraguan people to have to, instead of putting their money into literacy and bringing up the situation that the people lived in, to put their money into the military to defend their territory. And eventually it did help to weaken and bring down that revolutionary government in a lot of ways. But it's a known fact. It's been, you can find it on Google, or you can find movies about it, about how the U.S. used the Contras to bring cocaine into the U.S., inventing or creating crack cocaine, which was made in a laboratory, mm-hmm. a derivative of cocaine, targeting the African community, beginning with Los Angeles and then Oakland, that just devastated a generation or more of Africans who were left in a very devastated position to begin with, following the defeat of the African Revolution, in which the leaders were assassinated and the organizations of the Black Revolution of the 60s were wiped out by the U.S. government's COINTELPRO program. And I think that the chairman and the African People's Socialist Party is so profound for analyzing the defeat of the counterinsurgency, that the Black Revolution didn't just end because it won its gains. Mm-hmm. You know, that struggle is still there, and actually the conditions of the people are worse than they've ever been. So, you know, just to look at this reality of drugs inside the U.S., you can see whole towns and sections of the U.S. where the economy is bad for white people, and the drug of choice often is methamphetamine, and there's labs everywhere, but you don't see the police knocking down people's doors. You don't see helicopters flying over and terrorizing the people and putting them into prison. And the numbers, you know, and the way that this war, this SWAT teams are breaking down doors in the African community, shooting people's family, their children, their sons, their grandfathers, their dogs, and everything else, you know.
That's right.
So it's a two-tiered situation in this country, and that marijuana possession charges make up nearly half of total drug arrests. Over half the 2.3 million people in the U.S. prison system are Africans, with most charged with nonviolent drug offenses. Yet most drug users and sellers in the U.S. are white people. And the fact is that historically, the U.S. has given a penalty ratio of 100-1 for users of crack cocaine, supposedly, which are generally African, as opposed to users of powder cocaine, which are white people, which you will find is a much more expensive form of the drug that's available to middle class and rich white people.
Yep.
But the U.S. government just supposedly reduced that ratio to 1 to 18. So in other words, Africans are 18 times more likely to get a much higher sentence for crack cocaine than a white person is for powder cocaine. And this is something that the Eric Holder, Obama regime are claiming as a great victory. But in fact, as an article in Black Agenda Report by Bruce Dixon this week shows that that the Obama and Eric Holder's Justice Department have gone to court repeatedly to keep Africans behind bars, even on this reduced sentencing. And I think it's also important to point out that even though marijuana is now legal, totally, fully legal, especially in Colorado, Africans and anybody else who are in prison on marijuana charges for possession of marijuana that would now be legal are not going to be released. Mm-hmm. They're not going to be released. That's not even an issue that's being talked about by Normal
right.
and all of the groups that, that have worked for this legalization. So, you know, it's what's a white man's pleasure mm-hmm. and leisure drug of choice is terror to the African community in terms of what can happen and to them and what does happen to Africans. And none of that is changing.
Right. Uhuru, so we have a clip here of a former U.S. Marshal and DEA agent, Matthew Fogg, who explicitly lays out how the system of policing in the African community and the imprisonment of African people is carried out as part of colonialism. Uhuru.
And he's African, an African DEA agent, by the way, for people who can't see.
Right.
I became supervisor of Group 42 for the Drug Enforcement Administration. They cross-designated me. I had to get sworn in as a special agent of DEA. So now I'm doing dual tasks. I'm a U.S. Marshal and I'm a special agent of DEA. That's when I picked up the name Batman. I'm talking about Gotham City, man. We were rolling, man. We were jumping on guys in the middle of the night. All of that swooping down on folks all across the country. Using these sort of tactical operations that we went out on that you would use in Vietnam or using some type of war-torn zone. And all of the stuff that we were doing, just calling it the war on drugs. And it wasn't very many black guys in my position. So when I would go into the war room where we were setting up all of our drug and gun addiction task forces, determining what cities where we're going to hit, I would notice that most of the time was always appeared to be urban areas. That's when I asked the question, well, don't they sell drugs out Potomac and Springfield and places like that? Or maybe y'all think they don't. The statistics show they use more drugs out in those areas than anywhere. The special agent in charge, he says, you know, we go out there and start messing with those folks. They know judges, they know lawyers, they know politicians. You start locking their kids up, somebody's going to jerk our chain. He said, they're going to call us on it, and before you know it, they're going to shut us down, and there goes your overtime. What I begin to see is that the drug war is totally about race. If we was locking up everybody, white and black, for doing the same drugs, they would have done the same thing they did with prohibition. They would have outlawed it. They would have said, let's stop this craziness because you're not putting my son in jail. My daughter's not going to jail. If it was an equal enforcement opportunity operation, we wouldn't be sitting here anyway. It's all about fairness, man, and understanding how would I want to be treated. Whether I'm on that one end or the other end, how would I want to be treated if everything was done equally?
So as we've been saying, this is a war on the African community, and even the colonial agents, such as this DEA agent, can identify this type of imprisonment and police containment of the African community as a war. The ACLU, in a report recently issued, found that the vast majority of counties in the U.S. that arrest Africans at a higher rate than white people, some having a disparity of greater than 10 to 1. This includes a lot of urban areas that are highly populated and supposedly liberal-leaning. Cook County, Illinois, which includes Chicago, has one of the largest disparities of any county. So does New York County in Manhattan and Kings County, New York, which includes Brooklyn. Now, the pro-marijuana movement might intervene here and say, this is why we have to legalize marijuana. They say if you legalize marijuana, that will solve the imprisonment of African people. They probably wouldn't even say that, but if they were to say anything. That is not even accurate. As Chairwoman Penny was saying, the legalization of marijuana does not translate into the end of the colonial incarceration and police containment of the African community. In fact, Massachusetts decriminalized the possession of small amounts of marijuana in 2009. In 2008, the African arrest rate in Massachusetts was 3.41 times the white arrest rate. Mm-hmm. In 2009, it was 5.4 times the white arrest rate. So that was after the decriminalization. So even if they legalize marijuana in every state, does that mean that charges will be dropped against millions of Africans in prison? No. And there is no discussion at all about this in the process of this push for marijuana legalization.
Right. And, you know, it's outrageous. And we have to win. We want to win all of the white people who are out there, you know, wanting to take a progressive stand to open our eyes to this.
Exactly.
Because we live in two Americas. We sit on the pedestal of the oppression of African people, and we don't even see. And there's so much talk of this growing militarized police force being trained now against the white community as well, or so the fears are that white people have. But it's been going on, you know, the loss of our rights, the NSA, the fact that the U.S. government is spying on white people and everybody in the world. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that the U.S. government used its spy program, COINTELPRO, to assassinate numbers, large numbers of African leaders in the 1960s and imprison others who are still in prison today.
Yeah.
And that there's this example of what has already happened in this country. It's not like, oh, that we're entering into new territory. The U.S. has been doing this and has done it from the beginning as colonial control. And the answer to stopping and ending what the U.S. government is doing to Africans and threatening to do by listening in and creating, you know, political prisons, et cetera, in a much larger way, is to align with solidarity with the African Revolution to end the U.S. government, period. It's got to be wiped off the face of the earth. When we look at the reality, you know, in this country, African people are supposedly 12% of the population. Now, that's generally what you hear, and I do think that that is a way underestimation of how many African people are in this country. I don't think that the U.S. wants us to know the large number of Africans that do live here.
Right.
I do think that it's a much larger population than we're told. But the fact is that of that 12% of the population, an estimated 14% are, quote, annual marijuana users. So that means 86% of marijuana users are white people or others.
Right.
86%. But 31% of marijuana possession arrests are of Africans. So it's clearly a political targeting of an entire community. And that it's a Jim Crow prison system.
Yeah.
And one in three of African males born today can expect to go to prison at some point in his life, according to the Sentencing Project. Statistically, every 28 hours, a cop murders an African person because of this police militarized force that is there to contain the African community and to hold it under martial law, as has been the case in the last 30 or 40 years. Following the defeat of the Black Revolution of the 60s. According to Justice Department data cited, police arrested African youth for drug crimes at more than twice the rate of white youth between 1980 and 2010. Yet a 2012 study from the National Institute on Drug Abuse found that white high school students were more likely to have abused illegal drugs within the past month than Black students of the same age.
Yeah.
You know, we all know, you can go to a concert outside in the park and everybody's lighting up and everybody's openly drinking and nothing ever happens. You look at this hideous festival here that was just last weekend called Gasparilla in Tampa,
yeah,
which is a celebration of a pirate, which is in fact pirates were slave traders. And people were outside drinking and smoking pot. But in the Martin Luther King parade, if Africans just gather...
Right, exactly.
The heavy-handed policing that's there to drive Africans on the off the street is clear. We face nothing like that. Mm-hmm. That African people have no right to assemble on the streets in this country. They do not have that right of assembly, which is supposed to be a constitutional right. That it has nothing to do, it's not even a question. If an African had an open container of beer, he or she would have to go to prison, would go to jail.
Right.
Would have to go to court and probably, you know, a couple weeks in jail for that. That would never happen to a white person. A white person can walk down the street drinking a beer and nothing would happen to him or her. But the fact is that if Africans were smoking pot in a crowd, they would know that they're going to go to prison for that.
Well, yeah, and in some cases go to prison or even be killed. Like Romarley Graham was a young African, I believe, yes, in Brooklyn, who was chased into his own apartment by the police. They claimed that he had a small possession of marijuana on his person, and they chased him into the apartment where I think his mother lived and shot him dead. This was an African teenager. So it's obviously, like you're saying, a completely different relationship to the state that white people have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to call on all the white people who are listening to get on board. You know, this government has got to go. It's a foul social system. And we don't want to be part of it. And a lot of us, I think, feel that we're not part of it. But the truth is that we do sit on that damn pedestal. There's two Americas. We experience it financially, even in the economic crisis. White families have 22 times the wealth of African families. And we experience it in terms of the right to enjoy the democratic rights of the U.S., the Constitution. We expect justice when we go to court. But that's not ever going to happen in the African community until African people have power over their lives, because there's colonialism right mm-hmm. here. You know, we're like settler colonizers. And if we want to be part of changing the world and we see this injustice and we want it to end, we've got to get on board in terms of struggle, solidarity with the struggle for liberation with African people.
Uhura. So we're going to take a quick break, make some announcements, and when we come back, we will be interviewing Walia Brooks, the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement. You're listening to Reparations in Action on uhururadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. On February 5th, Chairman Amalia Shetela, the chairman of the African People's Socialist Party, will be speaking at Eckerd College, Wednesday, February 5th at 6:30 p.m. The event will start at 6:30 and feature speeches from Penny Hess, chairwoman of the African People's Solidarity Committee. The event will also include Q&A and a book signing. This event will be held at Fox Hall, Eckerd College, 4200 54th Ave South in St. Petersburg, Florida. For more information, you can go to uhurusolidarity.org. So as we've been saying, this is a war on the African community, and even the colonial agents, such as this DEA agent, can identify this type of imprisonment and police containment of the African community as a war. The ACLU, in a report recently issued, found that the vast majority of counties in the U.S. that arrest Africans at a higher rate than white people, some having a disparity of greater than 10 to 1. This includes a lot of urban areas that are highly populated and supposedly liberal-leaning. Cook County, Illinois, which includes Chicago, has one of the largest disparities of any county. So does New York County in Manhattan, and Kings County, New York, which includes Brooklyn. Now, the pro-marijuana movement might intervene here and say, this is why we have to legalize marijuana. They say if you legalize marijuana, that will solve the imprisonment of African people. They probably wouldn't even say that, but if they were to say anything, that is not even accurate. As Chairwoman Penny was saying, the legalization of marijuana does not translate into the end of the colonial incarceration and police containment of the African community. In fact, Massachusetts decriminalized the possession of small amounts of marijuana in 2009. In 2008, the African arrest rate in Massachusetts was 3.41 times the white arrest rate. Mm-hmm. In 2009, it was 5.4 times the white arrest rate. So that was after the decriminalization. So even if they legalize marijuana in every state, does that mean that charges will be dropped against millions of Africans in prison? No. And there is no discussion at all about this in the process for the of this push for marijuana legalization. Uhuru, so we are here on Reparations in Action on uhururadio.com, and we've been discussing the issue of marijuana legalization. Before we bring on our special guest for today, I wanted to make a few quick announcements. The Uhuru House in St. Petersburg, Florida is hiring a program manager to create, promote, and coordinate dynamic African political, economic, and cultural community programs. The program manager will actively reach out to community members, organizations, artists, teachers, and others to realize the rental facilities, to utilize the rental facilities of the Uhuru House, including Aquaba Hall, a beautiful auditorium popular for family reunions, teen dances, conferences, and film showings. The Uhuru Jiko, a fully equipped commercial kitchen used by local food vendors, caterers, and for cooking classes, and conference rooms used for health screenings and group meetings. The program manager will conduct online and community promotions for the facilities, maintain a contact database, recruit and supervise volunteers, staff the reception office, and handle rental inquiries and contracts. Candidates should have at least 2 years of related experience in marketing or sales, and proficiency in Microsoft Word and Excel, as well as knowledge of social media, blogs, Google Docs, Flickr photo storage, and other online promotion tools. More information on this, you can call 727-821-2437 or email careers@apedf.org. On February 9th, Sunday, join the African People's Socialist Party for a special live broadcast of the Conference on Building Dual Power to Defeat Imperialism in Crisis. Built on the backs of African, indigenous, and oppressed peoples, parasitic capitalism and imperialism are being brought down. To learn more about the origins and present reality of this crisis and what many predict to be the upcoming period of poverty and employment soaring and the U.S. dollar continuing to decline, you can learn how you can participate in solidarity with the revolutionary survival programs of the African People's Socialist Party, building dual power through African self-reliance, community gardens, water purification, collective child care, and community security. Again, that's Sunday, February 9th, from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time, here on Uhuru Radio and uhurunews.com. So you've been listening to Reparations in Action. We've been discussing the question of marijuana legalization and how those lobbying for legalization fail to address the massive incarceration of African people, the majority of whom are locked up for nonviolent drug offenses. We've talked about how statistics show white people are the most frequent drug offenders. However, the same policies of police containment and mass imprisonment do not apply in the white community the way they do in the African community. So it's an honor to introduce our guest today to further address this issue. Our guest on the program is the president of the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement, Walia Brooks, who is leading the mass organization of African people organizing to take on these issues that we've been discussing. Welcome, President Walia Uhuru.
Oh, thank you.
Uhuru Walia, we appreciate that you could be on the show today as organizers in solidarity with African liberation. We recognize that this question comes down to African people being able to have economic development and power over their communities. Our ability as white people to have wealth in our community and for white people to easily access drugs without fear of imprisonment has always come at the expense of African people. Could you add to how this takes effect in African communities, and what is your take on the question of marijuana legalization and what this means for the African working class?
I want to unite. I think that the question of the drug use and the incarceration rate from white, from Europeans to Africans is unbalanced. I read in the article that Africans are 4 times as likely to go to jail on marijuana offenses as Europeans, and at the same time, they have the same amount of drug use. And so it just appears that the state is doing whatever it is in its power to, and it's within its best interest. They're legalizing marijuana to get capital, to gain capital from that, the same way they are incarcerating Africans. So it's not a question of should marijuana use be legal. It's a question of the state making it legal to gain money from it. And so from before this point, you know, marijuana was a drug or something that should be stayed away from, you know, something that's bad for the community, and we have to have, you know, certain laws for people who sell it and use it. And it's just mighty funny that the people who are most affected by these laws are Africans, and that's the way that it's set up, because it's in the best interest of the state to have, you know, Africans in prison, and they make money off of nobody in prison. And then now we're in this present time, all of a sudden, it's a great chance to legalize marijuana, and then they can reap the benefits of it being legalized as well. So I think that's a major contradiction, but that's the way the state that it wants it to be. And no one is saying that, well, since marijuana is going to be legalized, all of the African people who were incarcerated on marijuana charges or arrested or on parole or detained for marijuana charges, are all of those charges going to be lifted? I don't hear anyone saying that or even addressing this issue.
That's exactly right. And, you know, we understand this is a war on African people that ultimately comes down to keeping the resources out of the hands of the African community and keeping Africans in prison. How does the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement address this issue in its work?
Well, NPDOM, we want to raise up our revolutionary national democratic program, where we have certain demands of the state. And this is the program that we use to organize the community. So one of our demands under reparations is point 49. We demand an end of the public policy of police containment and military occupation of African communities and countries worldwide, which were implemented under the guise of war on terror, drugs, gangs, etc. We demand their replacement with the public policy of economic development through massive capital infusion that will be used to uplift the entire community by supporting existing African businesses, establishing new African businesses, including cooperatives in the overall industrialization of Africa and African communities, which promotes the needs and interests of our oppressed and exploited communities, thereby contributing to the general self-reliance of the African people. So basically, we're calling for the end of police containment and military occupation of our community. We're calling for the lifting of these designer drug laws to just keep African people, you know, contained. And so basically they get money off the backs of African prisoners. That's what we're calling for when we organize our forces to fight again. And basically, essentially, we're demanding reparations for this, because when someone goes to jail, and even if it is a marijuana charge, that person is taken away from that community. That person is taken away from their family, and all the resources that they would contribute to that family is robbed of them. So now all of a sudden, marijuana is legal, so then they need to compensate people who were, you know, kidnapped and taken away from their family. This is what we're calling for.
Uhuru. The International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement is building the leading African mass organization worldwide for African people, challenging police containment and winning the masses of African people to organize in their communities for for self-determination and economic development. Where throughout the world is Impedum building, and what kind of work does Impedum do to build across the U.S. and the world?
It's very exciting work that we're doing right now. We are building in North America and Africa and also in Europe. We have branches in the Northeast that are in Toronto, Canada, New York City, North New Jersey, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. We are located in the Southeast in Huntsville, Alabama. St. Petersburg, Florida. On the West Coast, we have a chapter in Oakland and also in San Diego. We have comrades who are organizing in London and the UK. Also, we have a base in Stockholm, Sweden, and we have forces in Sierra Leone. And at this time, we are building towards our annual convention, which will be in North New Jersey on September 20th through 22nd. Also, we are also encouraging everyone to come to the conference, to view the conference on live stream as far as empowerment programs for the community. We are talking about, you know, organizing our community in case there's an economic crash, and or a disaster. So what will we do in that situation? So we are organizing the community to do community gardens, to create childcare collectives on surviving skills as far as purifying water and you know, how you eat and survive if there's an economic crisis. So these are some of the things that we are doing in Sudan. We have a very big event that's coming up as a part of our convention building strategy. We're having a Pleasure Resistance telethon, and it's going to be on live stream on February 22nd and 23rd. And the objective of this telethon is to win members and sustainable funding for our organization, because we do not receive any funding from the state. We are an organization of the people. And so we are having our telethon with different pledges, and when you pledge, you receive different gifts, and you receive a membership of our organization. So that's just some of the things that we are doing in Vietnam during this time period.
Uhuru. President Walia, really appreciate you being on the program today to, you know, provide insight from the International People's Democratic Uhuru Movement on this issue. Is there anything else you'd like to say? Anything else you'd like to add to the discussion today?
Oh, I just want to say that, you know, upon this being legal, then everyone who is incarcerated, every African who is incarcerated because of marijuana charges, they need to be set free, their records expunged, and we demand reparations for the African community. Uhuru.
Ending what the U.S. government is doing to Africans and threatening to do by listening in and creating, you know, plans, et cetera, in a much larger way is to align with solidarity with the African Revolution to end the U.S. government, period. It's
right.
Got to be wiped off the face of the earth. When we look at the reality, you know, in this country, African people are supposedly 12% of the population. Now, that's generally what you hear, and I do think that that is a way underestimation of how many African people are in this country. I don't think that the U.S. wants us to know the large number of Africans that do live here.
Right.
I do think that it's a much larger population than we're told, but the fact is that of that 12% of the population, an estimated 14% are quote, annual marijuana users. So that means 86% of marijuana users are white people or others.
Right.
86%. But 31% of marijuana possession arrests are of Africans. So it's clearly a political targeting of an entire community. And that it's a Jim Crow prison system.
Yeah.
And one in three of African males born today can expect to go to prison at some point in his life, according to the Sentencing Project. Statistically, every 28 hours, a cop murders an African person because of this police militarized force that is there to contain the African community and to hold it under martial law, as has been the case in the last 30 or 40 years following the defeat of the Black Revolution of the 60s. According to Justice Department data cited, police arrested African youth for drug crimes at more than twice the rate of white youth between 1980 and 2010. Yet a 2012 study from the National Institute on Drug Abuse found that white high school students were more likely to have abused illegal drugs within the past month than black students of the same age.
Yeah.
You know, we all know, you can go to a concert outside in the park and everybody's lighting up and everybody's openly drinking and nothing ever happens. You look at this hideous festival here that was just last weekend called Gasparilla in Tampa, which is a celebration of a pirate, which is, in fact, pirates were slave traders. And people were outside drinking and smoking pot. But in the Martin Luther King parade, if Africans just gather...
Right, exactly.
The police are... The heavy-handed policing that's there to drive Africans on the off the street is clear. It's, you know, it's we face nothing like that. Mm-hmm. That African people have no right to assemble on the streets in this country. They do not have that right of assembly, which is supposed to be a constitutional right. That it has nothing to do. It's not even a question. If an African had an open container of beer, he or she would have to go to prison. Would go to jail.
Right.
Would have to go to court and probably, you know, a couple weeks in jail for that. That would never happen to a white person. A white person can walk down the street drinking a beer and nothing would happen to him or her. But the fact is that if Africans were smoking pot in a crowd, they would know that they're going to go to prison for that.
Well, yeah, and in some cases go to prison or even be killed. Like Romarley Graham was a young African, I believe, in Brooklyn, who was chased into his own apartment by the police. They claim that he had a small possession of marijuana on his person, and they chased him into the apartment where I think his mother lived and shot him dead. This was an African teenager. So it's obviously, like you're saying, a completely different relationship to the state that white people have.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I just want to call on all the white people who are listening to get on board. You know, this government has got to go. It's a foul social system. And we don't want to be part of it. And a lot of us, I think, feel that we're not part of it. But the truth is that we do sit on that damn pedestal. There's two Americas. We experience it financially, even in the economic crisis. White families have 22 times the wealth of African families. And we experience it in terms of the right to enjoy the democratic rights of the U.S., the Constitution. We expect justice when we go to court, but that's not ever going to happen in the African community until African people have power over their lives, because there's colonialism right here. You know, we're like settler colonizers, and if we want to be part of changing the world and we see this injustice and we want it to be, we want it to end, we've got to get on board in terms of struggle, solidarity with the struggle for liberation with African people.
Uhura. So we're going to take a quick break, make some announcements, and when we come back, you've been listening to Reparations in Action on UhuruRadio.com, the online voice of the International African Revolution. On today's program, we discussed the question of marijuana legalization. You can also find more information about the Uhuru Solidarity Movement and our analysis, the analysis of the African People's Socialist Party that we unite with on the website, uhurusolidarity.org, and join the Uhuru Solidarity Movement by going to uhurusolidarity.org, clicking join, and become a member or sustaining member of the only organization of white people in the world that works under the leadership of the African Liberation Movement in solidarity with the struggle of African people for self-determination, economic development, and national liberation. I want to just close out by making a quick announcement that on February 5th at Fox Hall at Eckerd College, this Wednesday, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Time, here in St. Petersburg, Florida, Chairman Omali Yeshitela will be speaking at Eckerd College at an event called Voice of the African Revolution. The chairman will be speaking at 6:30. It will go until 8:30 and will also feature presentations by Penny Hess, the chairperson of the African People Solidarity Committee. That's going to be this Wednesday, February 5th at Fox Hall, Eckerd College, 4200 54th Ave South, St. Petersburg, Florida, 33711. You can contact Uhuru Solidarity Movement St. Pete for more information. stpete@uhurusolidarity.org or call us at 727-683-9949. You can find more information about that as well on uhurunews.com or on Facebook. We thank you for listening. Be sure to tune in every Sunday, 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Reparations in Action. Next week, the program will be preempted by the 11-5 broadcast of the Imperialism in Crisis Build Dual Power Conference that the African People Socialist Party is holding. But after that, we'll be returning to our regularly scheduled show, and we definitely encourage all of our listeners to mark your calendar for next Sunday's conference from 11 a.m. to 5 p.m. Eastern Time, Imperialism in Crisis, Build Dual Power. Thank you once again for listening to Reparations in Action here on uhururadio.com. Uhuru.
1, 2, 3. And brothers, because if you do, you can hear their voices still calling across the years, and they're all crying across the ocean, and they're crying across the land, and they will too. We all come to understand, none of us are free, none of us are free. None of us are free, one of us are chained, none of us are free. And there are people still in darkness, and they just can't see the light. If you don't say it's wrong, then that says it's right. We got to try to feel for each other, let our brothers know that we care.